Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Smithsonian Magazine program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. The articles I'll be reading today were all published in November of 2024 by the Smithsonian Magazine. I hope you enjoy the program. We'll begin with this article, titled, An Ancient Tablet Inscribed with 9 of the 10 Commandments from the Book of Exodus is for sale. The marble slab, which dates to between 300 and 500 CE, is the oldest known stone tablet inscribed with the commandments. Nobody recognized its significance until decades after its discovery. It's written by Julia Binswanger. The oldest known stone tablet, featuring an inscription of the Ten Commandments, is going to auction, where experts think it could sell for between $1 and $2 million. A 1,500-year-old marble slab was discovered in 1913 during a railway excavation along the southern coast of what is now Israel. Dating to between 300 and 500 CE, it was unearthed near the locations of early synagogues, mosques, and churches. On December 18th, Sotheby's will sell the tablet, which features 20 lines of Paleo-Hebrew script. It stands about 2 feet tall and weighs 115 pounds. This is the first time it's been on the market since 2016, when it brought in $850,000. We understood how powerful the object was, and we were really thrilled to be able to offer it for sale to the public, Sharon Lieberman Minns, Sotheby's International Senior Specialist of Judaica, Books and Manuscripts, tells Art News' Karen K. Ho. This is really one of a kind, she adds. It's one of the most important historic artifacts that I've ever handled. However, for many years, the artifact's discovery, no one understood the extent of the tablet's historical significance. Per Sotheby's, someone once used it as a paving stone at the entrance of their house. The inscription, which faced upwards, sustained damage as guests walked on it. Some of the letters of the central part of the inscription are blurred, but still readable under proper lighting, either from the conditions of its burial or foot traffic while it was resting in the courtyard. David Michaels, director of ancient coins for Heritage Auctions, told CNN's Georgia McCafferty in 2016. In 1943, its circumstances finally changed. Y. Kaplan, a municipal archaeologist, bought the slab and realized that it was a rare text known as a Samaritan Decalogue. It was made by the Samaritans, an ancient group whose beliefs are rooted in the Old Testament. Unlike Jews, however, they believe that God's dwelling place is Mount Gerizim in the present-day West Bank, rather than Mount Zion in Jerusalem. Most of the text on the marble reflects biblical verses familiar to both Christian and Jewish traditions, per a statement from Sotheby's. However, it only lists 9 of the commonly known commandments, leaving out, "Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord in vain." In its place is a directive to worship at Mount Gerizim. According to Sotheby's, the tablet may have once appeared on display in a Samaritan synagogue or private home. This remarkable tablet is not only a vastly important historic artifact, but a tangible link to the beliefs that helped shape Western civilization, says Richard Austin, Sotheby's global head of books and manuscripts. To encounter this shared piece of cultural heritage is to journey through millennia and connect with cultures and faiths told through one of humanity's earliest and most enduring moral codes. That's the end of the first article, an ancient tablet inscribed with 9 of the 10 commandments from the book of Exodus is on sale, by Julia Binswanger. This article's title is How Mistletoe Became a Christmas Kissing Tradition, The Thorny Origins of the Yuletide Canoodling Ritual, by Sonia Anderson, a Daily Correspondent. The Yuletide decorations are up, a trimmed tree, jolly stockings on the mantle, and wait, what's that white buried weed hanging from the ceiling? And why are people so amorous when they find themselves beneath it? Mistletoe, a parasitic plant, is actually accustomed to the suspension. In nature, it grows only on other trees' branches, and it's long been associated with mystical power. In Norse myth, the god Balder is mistakenly killed by an arrow of mistletoe, after which the plant becomes synonymous with his grieving mother's undying love. While mistletoe's berries are poisonous, ancient Romans and Greeks used its leaves medicinally to treat cramps, epilepsy, and ulcers. And first-generation Celtic Druids apparently used mistletoe to make a sacred fertility elixir, one historic use that presaged the plant's now dominant identity as an excuse for kissing. The first known reference to smooching under the plant dates to a 1784 English poem in which 3 men kiss beneath the mistletoe the lips of a girl not turned of 20. By then, any woman or girl who walked beneath this vegetal decor had to stop and wait to be kissed. One historian suggests the tradition was thought up by a particularly lusty and inventive British boy, whose trick spread around the country, then the world. As the American author Washington Irving wrote around 1820, each berry on a sprig of mistletoe had come to represent a kiss that a man was allowed to bestow upon a young woman standing underneath the plant, and when the berries are all plucked, the privilege ceases. As for the girl on the receiving end, the era's otherwise chaste social customs dictated she never refuse a kiss under the mistletoe, lest she invite bad luck on the marriage market. Today's typical mistletoe decor differs from its 19th century precedent in a few ways. Its berries aren't poisonous, because the stuff's usually fake. Those false berries are often mistakenly red rather than white. And the sprigs are, one hopes, no longer being used to force kisses upon unwilling recipients. Still, at family gatherings and in cheesy movies, mistletoe remains the catalyst of many an awkward or playful holiday peck. That completes the article, How Mistletoe Became a Christmas Kissing Tradition, by Sonia Anderson. The title of the next article is The 6 Most Amazing Discoveries We've Made About Neptune. Despite the lack of a dedicated mission to the planet, scientists have learned plenty through ground observations and space telescopes. Written by Shi-In Kim, a reporter. When it came to discovering Neptune, scientists didn't need to see to believe. The 8th planet in our solar system was detected not with telescopes, but through math. In 1846, scientists had observed irregularities in Uranus's orbit, as if an invisible counterweight were tugging on the planet from the far side. From these observations, researchers calculated the position of a hypothetical planet, then pointed their best telescopes there. Thus, Neptune was found, plucked from a sea of stars in the night sky. About 30 times farther out from the Sun compared with Earth, Neptune sits at the fringes of our solar system and barely within range of our ground-based telescopes. The planet is so remote that the Voyager 2 mission, the only spacecraft to have paid a visit, took 12 years to arrive there from Earth. For 4 months in 1989, it skimmed that distant world and gathered valuable data on Neptune's bizarre features. Neptune belongs to the class of ice giants, whose membership also includes its neighbor, Uranus. As with the gas giants, Neptune's outer shell is primarily made up of hydrogen and helium. Deeper within, the mantle and core are no longer gassy, but instead rich with compressed exotic ices. Since the Voyager 2 flyby, ever-improving terrestrial telescopes, the Hubble spacecraft, and the James Webb Observatory have brought Neptune into clearer view, allowing scientists to advance their understanding of its skies, meteorology, and moons. Neptune is a world that's constantly remaking itself and enthralling its observers. Here are some of the most exciting discoveries that scientists have made of that ocean-colored planet. Neptune's true colors aren't deep blue. Neptune is named after the god of the ocean for its azure coat, but in truth, its colorings aren't really close to sea blue. The sapphire hues in the Voyager 2 mission photos were exaggerated by image processing to showcase the swirling cloud patterns more prominently. New research published this year rebalanced Neptune's saturation levels and revealed that the planet actually has a pale green-blue wash, similar to Uranus. Still, Neptune is a tad bluer. Its teal tones come from methane gas in its hydrogen and helium-rich atmosphere. Methane is adept at absorbing red wavelengths in the visible spectrum and scattering blue light. Uranus has methane too. More, in fact, but the strength of its blue is diluted by haze in its upper atmosphere. In contrast, Neptune is better at clearing its skies because it has a more active airspace. Winds on Neptune churn up methane gas from the deep, and they glom onto aerosol particles in the atmosphere, causing haze to rain out as snow. The traces of methane on Neptune do more than give the planet a cobalt coat. They reveal the planet's origins, that Neptune likely migrated inward sometime during its early history. Neptune's methane gas comes from methane ice, and scientists think such ice only forms on colder worlds that are much farther out from the Sun. Scientists think that a young Neptune lost speed and allowed itself to be reined in by the Sun's gravity, leaving behind its methane cache as a clue of its far-flung birthplace. Number 2. Crazy weather graces Neptune's skies. The gas giants might be famous for having the largest storms in the solar system, but Neptune holds the title for having the fastest winds. Supersonic gales blow at 1,200 miles per hour, around 5 times faster than the strongest gusts ever measured on Earth. Scientists are scratching their heads over what drives these powerful tempests. Being the farthest planet from the Sun in our solar system, Neptune doesn't receive enough sunlight to sustain its windy tendencies. Instead, some pundits finger Neptune's inner heat as the power source. Nick Teenby, a planetary scientist at the University of Bristol in England, says scientists are still trying to figure out what is happening inside the planet. There's something going on with this deep interior, he says. Neptune's relatively large size, its four times girthier than Earth, has allowed it to retain its primordial heat, so much so that it radiates twice as much warmth than it receives from the Sun. In fact, Neptune runs hotter than Uranus, Voyager 2 revealed. Besides the squalls, it rains on Neptune too. Not liquid droplets, but diamonds. To be clear, scientists haven't directly observed rock rain on Neptune, but they think it's plausible because Neptune is covered in a thick, gassy sheath, whose inner pressures are crushing enough to forge diamonds from methane in the atmosphere. Laboratory experiments by scientists since 1999 have recreated the conditions inside Neptune, and they confirm that the pressures are indeed capable of squeezing and heating organic compounds into stone. But mining Neptune's deep interior is impossible, because no robot can survive at the planet's extreme pressures. Number 3. The moon, Triton, tends to let off steam. Among Neptune's 16 known moons, the largest, Triton, is an oddball. It has fewer things in common with its other lunar siblings than it does with Pluto. That's because, like the former planet, Triton is a captured Kuiper Belt object. It originally belonged to a legion of icy shards that prowled the edges of the solar system before being snagged on Neptune's gravity. When Triton first entered orbit, it likely caused chaos among the other moons such that they collided with each other and reconfigured themselves. As further evidence of its oddity, Triton encircles its parent in the opposite direction compared with the other moons. But running counter to Neptune's spin is an unsustainable slog. Neptune's gravity is slowly sapping energy from Triton, causing the moon to inch closer to Neptune. Scientists predict that Triton might one day wander too close and end up becoming gravitationally sheared into fragments. Triton's peculiarity doesn't end there. When Voyager 2 dropped by the Neptunian system, the spacecraft observed 5-mile-high plumes bursting out of Triton. The plumes rain out as snow on the moon's surface or form the moon's rich ionosphere, a lunar sheath of charged particles. Some scientists suspect that the plumes come from the sun heating through Triton's ice cap until a pressure buildup causes a watery explosion, similar to the mechanism of popcorn. In recent years, scientists have proposed an even more outlandish explanation. The plumes are hydrothermal ejecta from an underground ocean. In the 80s, we had no room in our imagination that there could possibly be liquid water that far out in the solar system, says Abigail Reimer, a space physicist at the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory. But discoveries of ocean worlds on Saturn's Enceladus and Jupiter's Europa, both of which have spouted similar-looking plumes, have made scientists cautiously hopeful that the Neptunian moon could also be harboring a sodden secret. Number 4. Ever-changing spots, model, Neptune's surface. Jupiter boasts a great red spot, but its counterparts exist on Neptune. During the Voyager 2 flyby, the spacecraft observed a vortex amid Neptune's clouds that scientists later dubbed as the Great Dark Spot. Heidi Hamel, a planetary astronomer at the nonprofit Association of Universities for Research in Astronomy, recalls tracking this storm cloud with ground telescopes on Hawaii's Mauna Kea when she was a graduate student. But when the Hubble Space Telescope turned its gaze toward Neptune's dark sky in 1994, the spot had disappeared. Since then, at least five more shadowy spots have peppered Neptune's face. Unlike Jupiter's long-lasting vortex, Neptune's blemishes come and go within 5 years or so. Their bruised appearances may come from upper clouds, parting to reveal darker layers underneath, or perhaps a dark cloud tower looming in the stratosphere. Through Hubble, scientists have also observed these smudges zigzagging across Neptune's hemispheres. Moreover, these dark spots are often flanked by bright streaks, a product of winds flowing over the storms and freezing out methane ice crystals that glint. This phenomenon shows just how incredibly complex Neptune is, Hamill says. This planet is really changeable. It's not like a leopard, right? It changes its spots. But how it conjures up its storms is still a tantalizing mystery. We'll need another mission someday to Neptune to truly figure that out, she adds. Number 5, the magnetic field is a mess. Most planets in the solar system have a magnetic field whose spheres of influence look like the symmetric lobes of an hourglass. But the ice giants deviate from their planetary brethren. Neptune has got a screwy magnetic field, Hamill says. For starters, the planet's magnetic field lines look like the head and arms of a flailing jellyfish, whereas other planets have a magnetic field axis that skews the core and is slightly tilted from the spin axis. Neptune's magnetic axis not only completely misses the center, but also doesn't go all the way through. In other words, the magnetic pole is buried inside the planet, somewhere between the cap and the equator. Neptune's mantle is a mix of super-ionic ices that's neither quite liquid nor solid. The mobile ions here are responsible for drumming up Neptune's magnetic shield. Given that its magnetosphere factory lies in the mantle layer rather than the core, the planet pays no heed to the centrality rules that govern typical magnetospheres. Such a wonky magnetosphere would probably give rise to peculiar aureas, unlike what we see on Earth. There have been a lot of open questions about what the interaction of the solar wind with Neptune's magnetosphere looks like, says Carol Patti, a magnetosphere scientist at the University of Oregon. Earth's telescopes aren't strong enough to view Neptune's auroras directly, but scientists think that they blossom in weak patches close to the equator, rather than trace circular streams near the poles. Neptune's magnetosphere is large enough to envelop Triton. In fact, scientists suspect that the magnetosphere coaxes Triton's energetic particles to cross over to Neptune's atmosphere and excite auroral flares on the planet. Lastly, number 6. Like the other planetary giants, Neptune has rings. Neptune joins the ranks of Jupiter and Saturn in that it also has rings, albeit a set that isn't quite so prominent. Scientists first detected Neptune's gossamer halo in 1984 using ground-based telescopes. When Neptune crossed in front of a star, the planet seemed to block some of the starlight even before reaching a full eclipse, suggesting that some wispy mass drifted beyond the geographical boundary of the planet. A ring, perhaps. Even then, scientists disputed the ring's existence for years because of inconsistent observations. Finally, Voyager 2 put an end to those arguments once and for all after it saw Neptune's ring in its full glory close up. It turns out Neptune's ring is clumpy, so some sections are harder to detect than others. The arcs have shifted slightly, since their first detection, leading scientists to believe that the rings are young and still settling in. Since Voyager, scientists have advanced ground-based telescope technology to reliably discern the ring's faint signal. But the James Webb Space Telescope takes the cake at revealing Neptune's wreath in unprecedented detail, and the image it captured is a showstopper. When Hamill first saw these new visualizations in 2022, I actually started crying, she says. And that completes the article. The author, Shi In Kim, is a Washington, D.C.-based freelance science journalist. And the name of her article was The Six Most Amazing Discoveries We've Made About Neptune. And that ends the broadcast for today. We have run out of time. This has been the Smithsonian Magazine program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your Sun Sounds volunteer reader today. I hope you enjoyed the program. The articles were all published in November of 2024 by the Smithsonian Magazine. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and keep listening to the premium programming offered by Sun Sounds of Arizona on a 24/7 basis. And if you've missed a program you'd like to hear, go to the sunsounds.org website, click on the broadcast info and audio. On the next screen, click on Demand. You'll see a list of programs available to you. Hopefully, the one you want is listed there. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.